Ricky and Pete with Heiko Lake Magazine. And we're in the WHLF FM 95.3 studio with Nick Long. And this is an interview with Nick Long. Okay. I'd just like to start off with, how long have you been in radio?
Well, I actually started 1973, the summer of 73, a guy by the name of Andy Hall, who was working Sunday afternoons at this radio station when it was at a different location. The radio stations had several incarnations. It was originally at what was called Fairgrounds, the old Halifax County Fairgrounds, and then it modernized and went to what was the security building, which is now called the Codora Building, Main Street, South Boston. At that time, Andy was working the Sunday afternoon shift, and when he was leaving to go to school at Elon University, they needed someone to take over the Sunday afternoon shift, so I became his fill-in guy. I sat and watched. I was an untrained talent and an unpaid talent, and I sort of watched what he did and said, yeah, I could do that. And when he went to school the following that fall, I was given the job. So I've been doing, to answer your question, since 1973.
Were you always interested in radio?
You know, this question I've answered several times, but back in the 60s, the AM-FM portable radio was the iPhone of its era. And there was an AM-FM portable radio that was $9.99, just like today's iPhone, only mine was $9.99, okay? My dad was in the military, and we would go to school, come home, have dinner, and sort of do homework, and then as soon as you finished your homework, you went outside, and in the little cul-de-sac that we were living in, all the kids would get together, and you'd bring your little AM-FM radio. And we'd go from, everybody would have a station, and some guys went to R&B, and some guys went to, you know, Rolling Stones and stuff like that. And, you know, we'd be listening to tunes, and some guys would find the St. Louis Cardinal baseball game, and we'd listen to that, you know, and it was the coolest thing in the world. So that's what gravitated me to this industry. So yes, I was always pulled by the desire of having a chance to do this for a living. When I finally got out of high school, my dad, I was always pretty good with the mathematics, and dad thought that I'd be a great accountant. So he sent me down to one of my great aunts who lived in Highland Springs, and I went to John Tyler Community College and was studying accounting. And I met a dude named Tony Sposa. His dad was Anthony Sposa, who ran the Broadcast Academy of Richmond. Okay, they sold a sweatshirt with a lightning bolt across it and B-A-R, which was very appropriate also because I learned most of my talent at the bar. Okay. But I went after finishing my time at John Tyler and went to the Broadcast Academy of Richmond, got the necessary certificates because the FCC, at the time, you had to get an Element 9 endorsement, you had to get a third-class license, you know, which now, I mean, when we do, and when I was hired here the first time full-time, I was the 13th full-time employee, plus there were, like, at the time, 7 or 8 part-time guys. I don't know how in the world Mr. Cole was making a living here. I mean, how would you pay that many people?
Right.
Other than the fact that nobody was making any money. Okay. Some things never change. But anyway, we went through that, and, you know, got the job, and this is what I've done all my life. So.
Kind of along the same topic, when I was a kid, I was fascinated with radio, and I have a family member who had his own radio program until he passed last year. Now his son carries on with it. So I've kind of been around radio my whole life. But I remember I was extraordinarily fascinated with the idea of getting a ham radio license. But I was kind of intimidated by the amount of studying and work that would go into, because back then you had to literally be certified and take a test.
Yeah.
Did you ever want to go beyond that realm?
Well, you know, in fact, one of the jobs that I had, well, like I said, I was always pretty decent with math, okay? I passed some tests to study some of the engineering stuff you're talking about. I am not an engineer. I did not understand the concepts. But at that time, there were classes that you could take where they were basically teaching you the formulas, you know, how to measure direct current and that type of thing. I had no idea of how to do these things, but yeah, I could figure it out, you know. At the time, it was just sit here, learn this, you know, and study this regulation and that type of thing. Yeah, so, but no, I never really got into the engineering aspect of the industry. I've had to learn more than I really care to know, but not like I should. I do not have the background that I wish I had, but then again, I'm glad I know what I know, you know what I mean? The engineering part, that's also another thing that, to be perfectly honest with you, everyone in this industry that is a broadcast engineer is aging out. It's one of the greatest needs for this company and the entire industry is finding someone who really does understand, you know, plate current, plate voltage equals output. What makes these things happen to get the output? The engineers of tomorrow, I don't know where they're from.
It's interesting that you say that because, what was it, a year ago, probably the most world-famous nighttime radio icon died, and when Art Bell died, you would have thought that Nevada was going to go into the Hoover Dam. It was, by God, from up Nevada, it's going to be lost without Art Bell. But he had that kind of presence, and he used to talk about that, that there is one aspect of it. What did he say? He said, any jackass can tear down a barn, but it takes a carpenter to build one. And you can get anybody to get on the radio, but can you get somebody on there that understands the concepts and the dynamics behind it?
I think he's exactly right. The industry today is changing, just as every industry has. There are formatics, okay, today that rule. You know, in fact, our radio station it's been around since 1947.
Okay,
there are some diehard things that we do that make it successful.
Correct,
and the most successful thing that we do is anything that we do that is local, whether it be the racing at South Boston Speedway, okay? And there was a time when the Busch Grand National Tour came there, okay, which is the second highest level in racing, when the Truck Series came to South Boston, which is the third highest level in NASCAR. That was great. But it's that lower level, the grassroots levels, the late model stock car, the street stocks, the pure stocks, and even now the pure stocks that come to South Boston, where there's a kid maybe from out in the county who is, you know, scraping a dollar together, his whole family is working on the car that fields his team. When we cover that team and we cover that race, it's mom and dad who may not have made it to the race. It's their family that's listening to hear how their nephew's doing, okay? It's the guy who works with his dad who's listening. You know, they may or may not, they may want to be at the race. They may be a race fan, but they're at a wedding, you know, or they're at a family reunion or a birthday party. So they're following the deal. Same thing with high school sports, okay? If their kids playing high school sports, or if their neighbor's kids playing high school sports, or just like last Thursday, we had a high school baseball team playing in the state semifinal game. You didn't have to know a soul on that team. You just knew a little bit about baseball, and these kids were from Halifax County, and they were all in on that. Tom Birch, the guy who owns our station and watches, does the formatics and did the reverse engineering on our music and stuff, to have, which I think is a pretty really solid format that we're playing now. But he says that, you know, you can look at the online statistics and huge spike. I mean, you're talking about someone online listenership maybe on an average day at a given hour, 15, 20 people listening. But a high school team playing for the state semifinal game, suddenly he had 300 people listening.
Right.
Okay, online. Plus there's all these mobile apps. We're on TuneIn and we're on iHeartRadio. The rest of the time, you know, they can listen to the music that we're playing on 40, 50, 150 other radio stations on their mobile app. Right. Or 500 stations on their laptop. If they want to listen to the, but they're only going to get the local high school kids playing in the state championship game or on the Friday night football game on this station. And that's when our audience, so anything we do is local is what makes the difference. And there's four times every day that we get a spike on our online listenership. And they are, number one, the obituaries. People from God only knows where tune in at 8 o'clock in the morning, 8:05, and at 5:05 in the afternoon, do you hear who in the family may have passed away or in their community? They don't live here anymore. They tune in. They tune in for the local news. And they tune in for, I'm trying to think of the, it's basically those three things, the obituaries, the local news, and, you know, any type of events or something like that. You know, if it's local, those regular programming things, they tune in for those things.
Which actually answered my next question.
I do that a lot.
Yes, you do. I see that. What do you think, I'm going to modify this question, because you just answered most of it. But what do you think overall is the most beneficial thing that local radio can provide to the community?
Well, you know, when I got into this thing, because I had this fascination with radio. Okay, I love the music. I love the thought that you could do play-by-play sports, which I get to do, and you know, it's just the concept of the thing. But a long time ago, Johnny Cole's daddy, John Cole, and Press Young, the guys who brought me into this industry, told me, and just like yesterday afternoon, we had these thunderstorms rumble through the area. We had tornado warnings for the northern part of the county. Cody and Volans and Nathley and Brooke Neal, and even into the next county over, Charlotte Courthouse, Phoenix. Our license is not to play music. Our license is not to do obituaries and not to do high school sports and racing and stuff like that, which is key to us making a living and for our community. But when that shit was hitting the fan yesterday afternoon, I was just got home. I had Bill Thomas here. He comes in at 2 in the afternoon. And between the two of us, we were putting out emergency broadcast messages. You know, and of course, today's technology enables me to be in Virgilina and on the air at the same time here. It's just, I mean, it still boggles my mind. But the same device that you're recording this on, I can record updates with a wireless card. I can email it to the office, download it remotely with my, it's very similar to log me in or go to my PC. I use a program similar to that. Download that file, upload it, put it into the system in a matter of 2 to 3 minutes max.
Wow.
So I'm getting updates from the National Weather Service, recording it in real time, emailing it to the office, downloading it, uploading it back into the system, putting it on in 3 minutes. And it used to be when something important that we're doing for the game, that's what I consider our most important thing is public safety. You know, it used to be when something like that happened, I'd get a phone call and I'd have to bust ass over here, you know, in funky weather, you know.
So the idea that local radio And I think a lot of us fall into this category of guilt. We not necessarily view local radio as anything but a place to bring advertisers in and the music that we listen to or the news. When in fact, at the inception, if I'm not mistaken, please correct me if I'm wrong, radio was devised to alert.
That's it. If you look out this window, there's a tornado siren. And that we can act, well, we work in coordination with the emergency services for Halifax County. And the activation comes there. That is our primary deal. It's really, you know, it goes back even further than that. Our license is to act as a public servant. You know, and we do, you know, part of the other things that we do is, you know, we are a conduit. We have local fire departments who are doing fundraisers for, you know, keep themselves operational. Somebody has a cancer benefit or something like that. We run public service announcements. I have, this morning I had the group from the Prizery in. They're going to be opening Mary Poppins on Friday. Mm-hmm. We had three of the actor or actresses in and the creative director, Chris Jones, interview those guys about the play that they're going to be doing. You know, had a little comedy in there, and, you know, it's information. And so we gave them 10 minutes, once at 5 after 7, and then once at 8:35 to sell the show. Tomorrow we'll have Justin Smith, who's with, and so that was a little easier than the one we're going to do with Justin. Justin is the Soil and Water Conservation District agent, and he's talking about what he does. It's a focus on ag, which we work with Kimberly Blanks, who's with the Ag Services Department here in the county. But, I mean, there's constantly someone in our community who wants to get out information. And, yeah, emergency information is one thing, but there's also helpful information that we try to provide. And, again, that goes back to guys like, you know, Johnny Cole's daddy, John Cole III, and John Cole Jr., and Fresh Young. I mean, it was all in Jim Chandler. It was all about community service, you know. Those guys, you know, that's how you get what you give, you know. If I do things for the community, I'm going to get out of it. I get what I want by giving them what they need, okay? I get support. Same thing with the high school football games, you know. I get the necessary support by giving them the coverage that they want, you know. So, and it's just the way it is with your publication as well.
Right. With all the technology that we have out there, okay, satellite radio,
yep,
podcasts,
yep,
ebooks, music,
yep,
on demand,
yep,
coupled with the idea that listeners want everything commercial free. I mean, we have DVR at home, speed past the commercials. How is local radio able to stay relevant?
Well, as long as there are automobiles, audio is going to be, you know, the thing about audio, and let's talk and break this down into two segments, audio and then radio. Audio is the one thing that you do when you're doing something else. You're listening to tunes at home when you're cooking, or when you're washing the car, you got music playing, or when you're having a party. You got a little cocktail party going, or social with friends. You got some music in the background. You got some audio going. And that's because audio sort of enhances whatever you're doing. Radio is sort of that type of a compliment. Nobody really says, I'm going to take time to listen to radio. I'm going to block out an hour to listen to radio. But in our community, our average commute is about 35 minutes.
Okay.
Okay. And there's a lot of commutes that are over an hour.
Okay.
You know, whether they're driving to Danville to work, or they're driving from Danville to work here in South Boston, or they're driving from, you know, Cody into South Boston, or, you know, pretty good long 45-minute drive, and they got to stop a couple times, you got to fill that hour with something. and it's either my radio station or someone else's radio station, or it could be a CD. But after a while, CD's going to get old. And it's also the fact that, and it really won't get old, because it's always going to be good to pop that good old tune in, because you're always going to need that refresh. But you're going to need information, and that's when radio delivers. You're not listening to the radio for an hour. You're driving for an hour. But the radio is there. It's there to complement doing what you're doing. It's something that you're doing other things, but you're doing it with radio. That's how we stay relevant. Plus, there's recent survey. I mean, the most recent survey, and of course, it's conducted by the Radio Advertising Bureau. So, but, you know, it's got its biases, but it's 93% of Americans listen to radio every day. Okay? 93% of Americans use radio in one form or another every day.
Again, tying into what you just said, obviously, competition and challenges arise with local radio. What challenges have you faced with technology ever evolving and trying again to stay up with local radio, besides having to learn what a podcast is and streaming?
Well, you know, it's a challenge. I mean, I'm old. I don't want to have to learn new stuff. Who needs a computer? And an iPhone, and you know, it's all that stuff's a challenge. And I mean, and I think it's really, really cool what people are doing with podcasts today. And you know, you can take the iMovie, you know, and you can video something and edit it, and you know, turn it into a movie if you really wanted to. But there's tons of stuff out there. I've got a son-in-law who just blows me away with some of the stuff that he does, and you know, he turns me on to, and he'll download a podcast, and email me the podcast, or email me a link to a podcast, and says, listen to this, you know, which is very cool to be able to broaden your horizons. All of that has its place, I don't know that there really are any challenges other than the fact that you've just got to get comfortable with that information. I mean, it's just like, I don't have the problem, but I know there are households that have microwaves blinking 12, okay? Mm-hmm. It's just the way it is.
Right. Or
we all have that threshold.
Remember the old VCRs that just used to blink 12.
And, you know, that's a gap in the technology world now. Because you can't, unless you buy a subscription DVR, you can't get a DVR, but I know it's coming, you know, and so.
Right.
And with technology now, you know, the mobile devices, a lot of people are, you know, the streaming services. I mean, I referred to my daughter and my son-in-law a moment ago. They are cord cutters. They do not subscribe. They do not pay $200 a month like I do for satellite TV. And I'm wondering why I'm doing it. I really am. How much longer will I do it, you know? But you know, the challenges for this media are the challenges for every other media, just as, you know, I've got some dear friends. And we were speaking of it earlier. The two local newspapers, I wish them both the best, but they've got their share of challenges as well. And it's all about that next generation. I think they've both adapted well to that online presence, but we all have got to, you know, we'll either roll with the punches or, you know, take
the... So the old adage that says I'm never too old to learn, because once I stop learning, I start forgetting, kind of comes into play here.
Absolutely.
Everything's left behind.
Ricky, it's either that or you die.
That's right.
You know, take the easy way out and cash your chips in. You know?
Yeah. Do you find that advertisers now are more apprehensive about sponsoring a radio station than they were, say, 10 or 15 years ago?
Absolutely not.
Really?
I really don't. I think that advertisers today need the one thing that advertisers 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 60 years ago need. They need an education. They need to know what they're getting. They need to realize, hey, it's not going to solve all your problems. If you've got a store that is not well run, if you've got products that really aren't needed, or if you've got issues, running ads is not going to fix it, okay? If you've got, you know, and running 30 ads is not going to change it. You've got to run a bunch of ads over a long enough period of time to change somebody's mind. You've got to give people the truth. You've got to give people a reason to buy, and occasionally you've got to make them a deal.
It's interesting that you say that because...
But I mean, there's no quick fix in advertising. I mean, I've got a go-to deal that I've told, and I know that your managing editor saw it one of the first times we met. You know, if I say Budweiser, certain things come to mind.
King of Beers.
Okay, King of Beers, perfect. But you know the can, you know what the can looks like. You know what their marketing thing looks like. You probably know what it is. You've got a good idea of what it tastes like. You know what it costs. You know where to get it. Why do they advertise it all the time?
To keep it with in
mind.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's
because right. There's always somebody who's going to be coming into the market. There's always going to be somebody looking for a change. There's always going to be somebody else asking them to buy Coors Light and Miller Light and all these other beers, craft beers. And if they don't remind you of Budweiser and how good that is. So these are the things, and I mean, and that's what I say, that and that little bit of that little spiel there is part of the education process with clients. Sure, you got a great business. Sure, you have wonderful place, well, excellent products, and you do a good job doing what you do. When's the last time you told our audience? And you should keep telling them that.
So, again, I think we in society that aren't as attuned or haven't focused on the back end side, whether it's TV, radio, whatever it is, we have a tendency to forget what you just said, that ultimately at the end of the day, there is no such thing as a quick fix, especially if, let's say, for the sake of argument, you have horrible, deplorable customer service.
Right.
How are you going to fix that? You can't unless you do it from the inside out. But radio, I think also, again, correct me if I'm wrong, provides a catalyst for when that change comes about to where you can now integrate yourself on the air and have an advertisement that is out there that may be profiling a new change or something different about your business that may be bringing people back.
Well, the same thing with your industry as well. I also have a lot of clients that are, we all do, saying, well, you know, I'm putting it on the internet and I'm doing this. And, you know, by time the customer goes to the internet and is Googling something, the buying decision has already been made. There's a buying cycle. There's a recognition of a need. There's a want. You know, then there's the investigation. And then once it gets to that investigation and they start doing the pricing and I'm looking, and car dealers are notorious for this. They're saying, well, yeah, I'm using Priceline and whatever the other thing is. Okay.
Carfax.
Yeah, all those things. Okay. Well, but are you giving them an opportunity beforehand to get into the buying cycle before they're out there actually comparing prices? If you're just going on prices, I don't think you're winning.
Which I think, and I'm not an expert on the computer industry, but I think what you just said is the defining factor on why those damn pop-up ads when you're on a computer keep coming up.
Yeah.
And because they know how valuable it is to them to get your attention at that moment, not to come back. Yeah. When I built websites...
Search engine optimization.
Exactly. And I would tell people, you know, I would have people that would say, well, Ricky, if I build a website, if I put all these links on it, it'll give people more information. And my first answer is no. Why do you want them to leave your website? You're going to put a link on that's going to take them somewhere else, and I guarantee you there's going to be a link on that one that'll take them somewhere else. So keep them focused, and hence pop-up ads do that. With respect to your programs that you have here, via interviews or any specialty programs or entertainment programming, if you will, with music, etc., what are some of the challenges that you face?
Well, you know, it's just the time to put it together, you know. I mean, our music is, we've done what I refer to as reverse engineered our music, okay? For, you know, we've gone through several iterations of what we're presenting to our public, but over the last year, we really looked at the demographics of our community. And we've really broken it down by what we've got and who keeps showing up in our ratings, and we know who's listening, we know our audience, we know our community real well, so we've done some reverse engineering. We've gone to the times that are working. We've gone to the type of music that's working. So we did a reverse engineering to come up with the format that we've got. And to be perfectly honest with you, we found that this format is not copied, but it's replicated off the number one format in Miami, Florida right now. It's Easy 93, and that is just, it's killing, and it's being replicated around the country. I mean, it's monkey see, monkey do almost every
right.
business today. So you've got to keep the music fresh, and that's one of the challenges that we're going through. But then it's the time to do these programs. You know, I mean, the deal that we did this morning with the Prizery, we had to make sure that we could get everybody together, you know, and you pre-record it, you do a little editing, and then you present it. The thing we'll do tomorrow with Justin was actually done yesterday. So that was recorded, and, you know, you got to do a little background. You can't do just like you, you know, even come in here and sound, do an interview with me. It was background. You did a little research, and, you know, it's not just... write it, you know.
You don't wing it.
Right. You gotta pull it all together. So that's what I'm dealing with. So that's the deal. And I mean, and you know, in a couple, you know, we're rolling into another election season here, and I mean that's always big around here because we're gonna have a couple contested races. I think it's Commissioner Revenue. We got a sheriff's race that's gonna be contested. You know, we got one or two school boards and. Maybe one or two board of supervisors races. That takes a lot of time.
I would love to come back and interview you during a political cycle. I really would.
Well,
I think my first question to you would be how do you keep politics relevant? But that's a whole nother.
You know, the thing is, I have always had a fascination with, and that's the thing about my job that I've loved. You know, and the description of a one-man band who can't carry a tune, you know? I get to do so much stuff, man. I get to do morning drive guy. I get to go out and work with clients about their marketing plans. I get to be Howard Cosell, you know? And then I get excited when I'm doing play-by-play sports. And I have, like, we were doing that state semifinal game the other day, and the very next... that was on Thursday. Then 2 days later on Saturday, we're doing a remote at Crossroads Ford, and people were coming up talking about the game, you know, and because they lost in the bottom of the seventh. I mean, it was a heartbreak. Two runs come from behind, lost. And somebody said, "Man, do you do play-by-play at home?" I said, "Well, at home it's different. I do play-by-play. I get to coach. I get to umpire. You know, I can do it all at home. It's great at home." But it's the same thing here. I mean, I've had a great career. You know, I came in thinking I'm just going to play records and tell jokes. But then I realized you had to sell advertising to make any money. You know, so I started selling advertising. And, you know, as time went on, I was just able to do other things. And it's been a charmed life. And now I'm about ready to die. It's because it's two more years I figure I'll be done, you know.
You know, and I think you probably will agree with this to a certain degree. If I hear you correctly, I hear you saying two things. One is that being in radio is kind of an anomaly where you're sitting by yourself behind a microphone, but yet in the same sense, you're talking to an entire community.
You're talking to an entire community, one person at a time.
Exactly. And
if you're not, you're not talking to anybody.
So the idea that a radio announcer is one of these people who are usually antisocial and work in a room by themselves is completely false.
Well,
because you have to be able to connect with people to do this and to do it well or effectively.
And you have to be neurotic. But
okay.
But you know, the thing is, if you're not connecting with that one person, it's got to be one person.
Yeah, it's an intimate moment.
Yeah,
it really is.
And if it's not, you're not.
People are inviting you into their homes or
into
their
cars.
Your car,
exactly.
Yeah.
Right. It's usually the car. You know, and I can tell you when I bump into someone, because we talk about different things at different times. And later on, I'll see someone and I'll say, you were talking about, okay, like this morning there was this tragic story. But there's a guy, I don't know if you guys saw it, but you can Google this. There was this magician who was doing a Houdini-type escape and drowned. Did you see this story?
No.
It was in India.
Okay.
So I told that story and I said, you know, my worst instincts were that somebody should have went, ta-da! Yeah. But or for my next trick.
Right.
So when somebody says something about that, I know they were listening at 7:20. I can tell you they were going to go to work between 7:30 and 8 o'clock. So I know what time they're getting in the car. You know, they had a 30 to 40, I'm sorry. But you know, it's that type of stuff.
Right, right.
You know. Sad, but true.
So that would have been a P.T. Barnum moment.
The show goes on. The four legs back.
That would work.
Yeah, right?
That would work. One-on-one.
Exactly.
One-on-one.
Exactly. That was really good. I've been thinking about that all day long.
But
you turned a tragedy into a joke.
But see, that
stuff, you do that?
That stuff happens all the time. That's what I do between songs, you know? I mean, you sit there and you look at the internet or you look at these stories and you go, what the heck, you know?
moving on to something else here. I think it's fascinating that I get to meet people, not just through Pete, but, you know, if I look at all my travels in the years that I've been on Earth, I think that I'm always, when I'm meeting people, always thinking about, okay, a similarity. And as I'm talking to you and listening to you, it's kind of an honor to be in this room with you, somebody who is part of what I consider to be a pioneering thing. You're a part of a life that has had some firsts, such as the first time the King of England ever addressed anybody after a coronation.
True.
Was King George. The first time the United States heard from their president was Franklin Delano Roosevelt with his fireside chats. And the irony there was he didn't do it because he found it was entertaining. He did it because he had inherited a mess and he was trying to connect with the people to get it fixed as quickly as possible.
Same thing with Churchill.
Exactly.
World War II.
And then we elected the first president who had his own radio program at the ripe old age of 18, and that was Ronald Reagan. So it's ironic that I get a chance to talk to you because you're in that league with these people. You really, really are.
You know, this job has been really good. It's really been great. You know, I mean, but again, this community has been fabulous. I mean, South Boston is just, it's got so much going on.
You said Boston Commons, I busted out laughing in the car because I come from the Northeast,
Right.
And Boston Commons, gee, in Virginia, I love that. Though I thought that was so great.
this community's got so much going on. I mean, you got the Speedway VIR. You guys, It is a diamond in the rough. Berry Hill, same thing. I mean, Clarksville has got, you know, and then, of course, you know, the things that this community is doing, and it's having to remake itself. You know, I mean, in my lifetime, and I look over there at that old stationery here from the the 40s or I guess the 60s where there was a tobacco leaf that was signature part of this station, you know? I mean, I remember when I first came to work here, they covered the opening of the tobacco market. We had tobacco programs on the air every day. You know, the tobacco talk with these guys and all this stuff. You know, we covered that industry. But this community is remaking itself. I mean, it's turning to the arts. It's turning to, you know, technology with Microsoft coming to town.
But don't you find that, I mean, not to make a cliche out of it, but I think, again, what I hear you saying is life in general has to reinvent itself to stay relevant, and that applies to this.
And this, you know, in this industry here, and radio, I have no idea what the future is going to hold. There's a young guy that I'm hoping I'm going to be able to sucker into taking over when I leave in 2 years. His name is Justin Lloyd. He's working at our station in Danville. He's been coming down helping me out quite a bit. I tell you, a guy who is just a remarkable story. His name is Bill Thomas, the guy I mentioned earlier, works for me in the afternoon. He's long retired. He's worked with radio stations all across the country. Works in Chicago market.
Wow.
There's a cartoon for Disney, okay? And one of the characters is Duck, who is a mad scientist.
Okay.
Have you seen that cartoon?
I can't remember
the guy's name. Bill is a voice for that cartoon.
Wow.
Bill does the voiceover work from his home here in South Boston. That's the type of talent that I just stumble upon and have here. And, you know, I see that type of potential with Justin as a young man. And, I mean, he's in his just had his first child about 3 weeks ago. He's 27, 8, something like that. I hired him 9 years ago.
Well, perhaps you can teach me how to stumble onto some talent. Just kidding.
I love Pete. Anyway, I gotta be nice to him until I get back to some more.
I understand. You're right, Woody.
That's right.
If you didn't decide to
but
go.
But there have been those guys come to this station time after time after time over the years. I mean, Jim Chandler, Ken Parton, Ross Garrett, Kenneth Cranford. Kenneth was a musician. I don't know what he ever got into radio for. I mean, it's just. And Johnny Cole was. His dad founded the station in 1947. He was retiring about the time. When I was first hired, he was still in the building. But he basically retired to Buena Vista, Florida, turned the thing over to Press Young at that time. But, I mean, as I think about it, and I got, you know, 1947. What that was like building a radio station.
It was still in its novel form. It was a novelty almost.
This guy was in World War II, and at the time, I mean, he set up back along the East Coast. They were concerned about the Germans attacking, and he was one of those guys who had these radar type devices or sonar type devices looking for the German U-boats that never showed up. But that was what he was doing, and he took that engineering talent and the money that he had in G.I. Bill and stuff like that, and parlayed it into a radio station in South Boston. And at that time, a radio station coming to a community was a big deal. They rolled out the red carpet for this guy.
Right.
And of course, that was...
And you know, you go... I speak from New York. WOR Radio is synonymous from Portland, Maine, all the way down to Boston and everywhere in between. You say WOR, everybody knows that. Mm-hmm. You know, what was his name? The very first Tonight Show host.
Jack Parr.
Jack Parr.
Yeah.
He's got his start in WOR.
Well, today, you know, you talk about technology. I joke a little bit. I try to roll with the punches with technology.
Right.
We have Marty, which is a UHF antenna and transmitter that we use for ball games and stuff, but there's this new technology where I basically use my iPhone or my Mac or and these little iPods and ear pods, whatever the hell they're called, and WINS 1010 New York. Mm-hmm. A guy by the name of Lee Harris came up with this. He invented the technology, and I bumped into him, met him, and told him what I was doing, and he showed me what he was doing. I went to his studios and I said, how much does all this stuff cost? We've worked out a little barter agreement. We're playing some spots for them. They're making some money on us. And that's how we did our remote Saturday. I can do a remote from anywhere that I can get internet service. Mm-hmm. It's got a nominal delay. And when I mean nominal, I'm talking about a fraction of a second. And when we had the playoffs in softball baseball a couple weeks ago, earlier this month, we had two teams playing. We had baseball on one field and softball on another. I put Randy Holmes, a good friend of mine who's a preacher, but he's been with me and worked radio with us 25 years. He was at softball game, I was at the baseball field. We just switched back and forth between innings with this QGo Live device. I'm amazed we haven't had a phone call to this point. I'm gonna let it go.
I only got a couple more questions, but it's been a joy talking to you.
Thank you.
If you didn't decide to go into local radio, what would Nick be doing right now?
Oh, let's see. I guess shortstop for the Yankees would not be a good answer.
That's a George W. Bush answer. Moving on.
I guess I couldn't be George W. Bush either, so... I only have a couple more years of this, and I'm saying that because my daughter is going to graduate, my youngest is going to graduate in February, but she's studying something really murky. She's studying musical theater, okay? My oldest daughter graduated from Radford and got out and got a great job. She's been promoted and she's working for a pharmaceutical company down in Raleigh, and you know, her future's fabulous. Not that Kaylee's isn't, but Kaylee's gonna have to get a job singing and dancing. And
that's a tough nut to crack.
It is. And I have seen that her opportunities are greater than I thought they were.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. She went to school in New York for a couple years at Hampton, New York on 61st. And now this last year and the rest of the next year, she's in L.A. And we'll get her BFA. I'm told that when she has this BFA, she'll be able to get a job, but will it be on Disney Cruise Line or will it be in a touring company or whatever the case may be? But when she gets out, she's going to have some significant debt. My goal is to help her pay off as much of it as I can over that next year or so when I turn 65. And what would I be doing then? Probably gardening, and I don't mean flowers. I mean just a few vegetables and stuff. And if I could do anything that I really wanted to do, it would probably be to farm something that didn't require a whole lot of education, you know? I mean, and I know taking care of cattle is way out of my league. You know, animals and stuff like that, I don't know that I could do that, but if I could grow something that wouldn't talk back to me, you know, and wouldn't need too much rain, and would be productive, and I could make a little money at it, I might do that. I think I'm going to probably end up getting a job with some company around here, though, that I wouldn't have to put a whole lot of time in. I've had some people talk to me, you know, and I may do something like that.
See, the last question was, what's next for Nick? And you just answered it. I love that, though. I do want to say something.
But if I do, you know, and I'm also considering, maybe a political career. I mean, I've thought about maybe on the Board of Supervisors or School Board or something like that, just because my dad lived to 88. Okay, I would love to have that deal, okay? And that figures that I've got 23 years that I can give back to my community. I have spent the last 5 years as the school board's parliamentarian,
okay?
So, you know, I've kind of kept up with the local issues. Maybe I could do something to help my district, which is Election District 7. Maybe I could do, you know, something for the county government. I've always leaned kind of Republican, mm-hmm. Okay? I'm not a big fan of the president. I don't mind saying that. Although he's done some fabulous things for for my industry. My business has started, my business jumped after he was elected. But I like to think of myself as a pragmatist because we need to make investments in our community. We need to make investments in this high school. We long overdue making the investment in the courthouse. You know, I've gone and referred to this state semifinal baseball game a couple times, but we went to Henrico County, was where we were playing the game. We went to this field that was really nice field, okay? The amenities at this park were really, really nice. And some of the people from Halifax County said, hey man, this is really nice. Well, Henrico County didn't build that field on our tax base, okay? We've got to do certain things that will enable our, you know, I just think that a lot of times this no new taxes crap, and that's the way I look at it. I don't want to raise taxes just to raise taxes, but I think that Halifax County deserves a little bit better than what they're getting. And sometimes that takes a little investment.
I'm going to ask you to make me a promise.
What's that?
If you choose to run for any office,
what?
Please give me the exclusive.
Sure, yeah. I'll be tickled.
I would love
to
talk to you.
Because, you know, and I think what this community needs is leadership. And I think that a lot of the guys who get in public office know what they need to do, but they're scared out of their socks.
To do it.
To say
the initiative. Yeah, I agree.
And if you stand up and say, don't you, and if somebody would just say, don't you deserve a little bit better than this crap that you're living with? I think you deserve better than this, and I'm going to make damn sure you get it.
Yeah, there's
if
a fire
in you. If somebody
would
say that.
Yeah.
If somebody would say that, you know, and I don't think, I'm not thinking about pissing away money. But that's why I feel like I'm conservative, but we do need to make necessary investments to have a better community.
But don't you think...
And do certain things to attract industry. And you can't do that nickel and diming yourself.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't think... I mean, a few moments ago, you coined the term pragmatist to define yourself. And I disagree with that. I think what you're basing everything you're saying on is what a lot of people in this country don't have. And that's common sense.
Well,
I don't know that anybody.
Well, when I say pragmatic, I mean I want to look at every issue and make a decision based upon
the merits of the issue as opposed to the merits of the party.
Versus saying this is everything's got to be defined by this by this criteria.
Exactly.
I think the criteria needs to fit the decision, not the decision fit the criteria. If
exactly.
I'm saying it right.
It has been an absolute pleasure. It really has. I'm turn this
I know
off
we're
now.
Over time, but 12:30. We're actually out of time. Did anything back in the
Do you need to turn that back on?
I've got to turn it back.